This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, chaos in Kabul. Truck bomb explosions in the Afghan capital expose the fragility of the current Afghan government and prompt the United States to consider sending more troops. Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. On May 31st, Kabul was rocked by one of the deadliest attacks in the 16-year-old civil war, leaving more than 150 dead. Afghan President Ashraf Ghani says that his country is under siege from the Taliban and the so-called Islamic State, but is also enmeshed in a so-called undeclared war with neighboring Pakistan. As a largely symbolic peace conference got underway in Kabul last week, Ghani urged world leaders to, quote, end state-sponsored terrorism, unquote. Ghani and his government believe that recent suicide attackers have been financed and trained in Pakistan, charges that Islamabad denies. Another suicide bombing on Saturday, June 3rd, killed 20 at a funeral for a protester. Hundreds of anti-government protesters have taken to the streets to express their anger at the government in Kabul, which seems unable to keep the country safe. Recent attacks certainly highlight the Afghan government's inability to provide security, even in the capital. This also will intensify the rift within the Trump administration over whether to increase America's military presence in Afghanistan. Trump's national security team has endorsed a plan to deploy up to 5,000 extra troops in addition to the 8,500 already deployed in advisory and support roles. Others in the White House remain opposed to further entangling America in a war which already spends about $3 billion per month. Trump has not yet made up his mind. The bombing strengthens the case that the Afghan government is losing control and needs more military assistance. Well, with us to analyze the situation in Afghanistan as the United States weighs the pros and cons of sending more troops are two distinguished analysts. Ambassador Omar Samad is founder and president of Silk Road Consulting, based in Virginia. He was senior Afghan expert in residence with the Center for Conflict Management at the U.S. Institute of Peace. Previously, he served as ambassador of Afghanistan to France and Canada. And Scott Warden, he's director of Afghanistan and Central Asia programs at the U.S. Institute of Peace. And prior to joining USIP, he was director of the Lessons Learned program at the Office of the Special Inspector General for Afghanistan and served as acting director of policy as well as a senior policy advisor for the Office of Afghanistan and Pakistan Affairs at the U.S. Agency for International Development. And both gentlemen join me here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Welcome to you both.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Thank you.
Well, Ambassador Samad, let me begin with you as an Afghan national. Of course, you're as shocked and dismayed at the current chaos in Kabul as we all are. What more do we know after these terrible bomb blasts? Who was behind them? Talk about your reaction.
Well, you see, the bomb blast is the most recent catastrophic event that hit Kabul. What the Afghans and how the Afghans see this is a series of attacks that have taken place over the past year at least, targeting not just Kabul but also other cities. Not long ago, we saw an attack, what I would call a fantastic attack, where the Taliban were able to infiltrate a military installation in northern Afghanistan, and where dozens of people were killed. So the Afghan population, on one hand, is very worried and concerned. On the other hand, they are upset, and they would like to see some type of accountability, some change, maybe reforms that would improve their security situation. Now, that is a difficult task to accomplish because terrorists obviously do not announce their attacks ahead of time, and they use all types of means to hurt people. But their purpose is to send a message, and their purpose is to demoralize, and their purpose is obviously to make the situation more unstable as it is.
Turning to you, Scott Warden, for your take on these attacks, what they mean, what they say about the current government. We're seeing protests in the streets now against the government because of what is perceived of as their inability to keep the country safe?
Well, I think it is a particularly devastating attack, and it has caused more political waves and more discontent with the government than a lot of previous ones. But it comes as part of a string of attacks. I saw one report since the beginning of 2016, there have been 20 deadly attacks in Kabul alone of varying degrees. This eclipses them all in terms of its scale and its magnitude, but it shows that there is this continuing problem to be able to secure the capital. And over time, as Ambassador said, it really does frustrate people. They want to have some kind of accountability, and they want a response. I think the difficulty in all of this is, according to the Afghan government sources, this was planned in Pakistan. Several others allegedly have been planned in Pakistan. And Pakistan is its own country. And finding ways to stop their support for the Taliban generally and for these kinds of attacks, if they're true, that's a very difficult process. And that involves diplomacy and negotiation, and it needs to be a regional effort as well as an Afghan effort.
Turning back to you, Ambassador Samad, what about the role of Pakistan? Is the Afghan government correct in attributing these attacks to Pakistan, to the ISI, their intelligence services? Are they behind it?
Given the last 2 to 3 decades of experience and history and the record that has been established between Afghanistan and Pakistan, and the fact that Taliban safe havens are in Pakistan, and I don't think anybody doubts that, the hope was that Pakistan would play a more positive role and realize that using non-state actors or engaging in proxy warfare, as some people think they're doing, would not only hurt Afghanistan, but their relationship with Afghanistan, but also would have a boomerang effect and hurt Pakistan itself eventually down the road, which it has, or if you look at the record again. We think that there are no good or bad Taliban. There are no good or bad terrorists. Terrorists are terrorists, whatever their shade or color or affiliation. Obviously, in this case, I think that Pakistan is expected to change course. And this may be a difficult thing for Afghans alone to do. And this is why I think Afghans are looking for other regional players as well as the international community as a whole to help bring that message to Pakistan. This is why Ashraf Ghani has been calling this an undeclared war. But at the same time, we are now facing not just the Taliban, the Afghan Taliban, who have their own objectives, but they are also so-called Islamic State cells. Now, these two militant groups, armed groups, are not always seeing eye to eye. But this has become a bigger problem for Afghanistan. And Afghans, again, point to Pakistan as being a problem when it comes to both groups.
Turning to you, Scott Warden, Ambassador Samad brings up a number of very important points, which we'll get to with respect to the Afghan Taliban and, of course, the rise of the Islamic State in Afghanistan. But let's get back to the Pakistan question, the role of Pakistan. I've heard some analysts say that the United States indeed needs to step up vis-a-vis pressure on Pakistan. Do you think the United States should do more to either withhold aid or somehow coerce Pakistan into being a better actor and not providing sanctuary, not supporting the Taliban and the Haqqani network?
I think that while there could be more pressure applied on Pakistan, the U.S. has diverse interests in that country. It's a very large country with nearly 200 million people. It has nuclear weapons that the U.S. is concerned about. And so it's been trying to balance the harm that sanctuaries for the Taliban cause to Afghanistan and create safe havens for terror. On the other hand, there is a harm to global and U.S. interests from instability within Pakistan. And so that's been the debate of how to strike that balance. I think that one thing that has not been looked at as much in past administrations that may need revisiting is Pakistan's interests in Afghanistan and how they have to do with India. So Pakistan, you know, has a view of its strategic interests vis-a-vis India. That is the dominant theme of how it views its foreign policy. It has fears, whether they're realistic or not. They are real fears on the Pakistani side of how certain governments or certain developments in Afghanistan will play in their rivalry with India. And while that is obviously not a simple topic to address, it is an essential one. And I think that any package or any approach to Pakistan and their support for safe havens has to look at the Afghanistan situation as well as Pakistan's view of India.
Well, let me put that question to you, Ambassador Samad. Since you said that something needs to be done, pressure on Pakistan to reduce its support for these nefarious actors like the Taliban, the Haqqani Network. But what about to the point that Scott brings up about the Indian influence in Afghanistan? We know they have a wide influence. They do many good things. The Afghan government has welcomed them. But that is the arch rival of Pakistan. Pakistan is a nuclear-armed country. So it's not like we can just tell them what to do. How do you reconcile that? Could Afghanistan do something to allay Pakistan's fears about Indian influence in the country? What do you think?
I think every Afghan who has either been in government or is following issues on the ground will tell you that this India card that Pakistan is waving as the reason for which it's killing Afghans and destroying Afghanistan and using terrorism as a foreign policy tool is bogus and a canard. Because on one hand, there is no proof or evidence that we have the kind of relationship with India that Pakistan pretends or is describing. That is not the kind of relationship we have. If you look at it at the core, it's mostly a historic relationship. It's a people-to-people relationship. It's a soft power relationship. It's a relationship that's based mostly on economics and development and infrastructure building. And very little of it, a very little part of it, has to do with security and training compared to what other countries are doing. Their thinking, as far as Afghans are concerned, is that Afghanistan has to be used. Yes, I mean, India is in the back on the back of their minds, but Afghanistan has to be used as a linchpin for Pakistan towards Central Asia. And that this is the Pakistanis think that they need to subjugate Afghanistan. This has been the case since the 1990s. Subjugate Afghanistan for a variety of reasons. India is just one probably small part of it.
Before we go to a break, Scott Worden, isn't it true, though, that Pakistan has this problem with India? No matter what it does, that is, India could have the least footprint or a bigger footprint or do just very constructive things in Afghanistan, but nothing will really satisfy Pakistan as long as India has some level of presence there.
Well, let me be clear. I'm not saying that the Pakistan allegations of Indian involvement are true, and I tend to agree with the ambassador. My point is that from the U.S. perspective, in terms of how they can leverage influence against Pakistan to improve the situation in Afghanistan, the U.S. should think about India-Pakistan relations outside of Afghanistan and look at ways to alleviate, if possible, the pressure and the tension in that relationship as a way to get more productive relations in Afghanistan.
A very good point. You're listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. Our panelists are Ambassador Omar Samad. He's founder and president of Silk Road Consulting. That's based in the state of Virginia. He was formerly Afghan ambassador to France and Canada. And Scott Worden, from whom you just heard. He's director of Afghanistan and Central Asia programs at the U.S. Institute of Peace, previously a senior policy advisor for the Office of Afghanistan and Pakistan Affairs at USAID. We're talking about the challenges facing Afghanistan in light of recent terror attacks which have rocked Kabul. And this is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available for free download on iTunes. You can find the download by clicking on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow me on Twitter at Carol Castiel VOA or connect with us on Facebook. Now here's a shout out to Rashid Harbash from Casablanca, Morocco. If you want to hear your name on the air, please send an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Well, back to you, Ambassador Samad, and let's go to what the United States can do either on the civilian side or on the military side. Now, we have this proposal to send another 5,000 troops, but the question is, what exactly, you know, would these troops do? What would be their mission, and how would they add to security?
Well, there are two ways the United States can approach the Afghan issue, as it's being discussed right now, and there are no definite or concluding decisions as of yet. One is the role that the United States itself is playing. The United States has been the big elephant in the Afghan room, but it's an elephant whose influence seems to be diminishing over time. What I think the United States should do is, because of the history that has been built over the last 15 years, is to show commitment and take Afghanistan seriously. It is a strategic issue. It's not just about Afghanistan itself. It touches a lot of other regional and strategic issues, not only from a security perspective, but also geopolitical and geoeconomic. And I think that for that purpose, the United States should remain engaged, but remain engaged in an active and effective manner. On the other hand, Afghanistan is also an international issue. It's a global issue and a regional one. And in that, from that perspective, I think the United States should continue to engage its allies and other countries who are stakeholders in Afghanistan. And the United States should see how it can create coalitions around ideas and solutions that work in Afghanistan.
Turning to you, Scott Warner, I know the U.S. Institute of Peace is very active in this question. How much of a difference would it make to send another 5,000 troops? Some analysts have said it's not just the quantity, but rather the quality that these troops should, if they do go, return to what is called a train and assist mission, and their strategy should be more conditions-based. So there's that question, and also a concomitant civilian strategy, similar to what Ambassador was saying.
Well, first of all, I think it's important to underscore that the U.S. does still have significant interest in Afghanistan. The remaining there and having a robust presence to assist the Afghan government is really important for U.S. security. And if you see what happens in Iraq when U.S. troops withdrew, it's a different country and a different situation. But still, without that support to the local military, safe havens for terrorism reoccurred. And I think there's a significant risk of that in Afghanistan. As far as the number of troops and their purpose, I think there is a need for increased military assistance in modest amounts, but we have the start of what is typically called the summer fighting season, but it's more easy to conduct attacks throughout Afghanistan by the Taliban when there's no snow in certain mountain passes, and this is expected to be a very difficult fight for the Afghan military. I think the key point, however, is that military assistance is not going to significantly defeat the Taliban in the numbers that we're talking about. It's rather to sustain the Afghan government as it builds up its own forces, which are getting better, but slowly. And it's to achieve a political objective. And that political objective is a settlement of the conflict where you can ensure that there are no safe havens for terrorism. That's the U.S. interest, but also ensure a peaceful and stable Afghanistan.
All right. Well, it's still an open question as to whether President Trump will deploy those troops and in what capacity. But back to you, Ambassador Samad, as we close, to talk about the Taliban and why they're still on the rise, why they control approximately 40% of the country and are making headway. And talk also about the threat from the so-called Islamic State, and to what extent are the so-called Islamic State fighters independent of the Taliban, or do you see coordination with the Taliban? Do they have a shared goal?
I do not see coordination with the Taliban yet. That may be a possibility down the road, because they share some strands of ideology that are similar, and they share some sourcing and support systems that at some level are shared. But they see each other as rivals right now. And that, I don't think, is going to change anytime soon. Having said this, I think that IS is losing momentum in Afghanistan. The Taliban, their objective, obviously, still, as they claim, is to overthrow the government in Kabul and to establish an emirate. But what I do also see within the Taliban are rifts. I see an opening through these rifts within the Taliban. There is a movement within the Taliban that is being suppressed on one hand, but a movement that is, I think, very organic, whereby they are seeking ways to enter into negotiations and enter into political talks. I think we need to explore that further without hurting those chances. At the same time, there's a part of the Taliban leadership that is very tied, closely tied to the Pakistani military establishment. They are calling the shots at the end of the day, and the big decisions and strategic decisions are taken by those individuals, and anyone who stands on their way is eliminated very quickly. So looking at this picture, at the picture that we have, a Taliban that is split in some ways provides opportunities, but at the same time, remember that the region is changing as well. The Russians are looking at this issue from a different perspective now because of IS and other considerations. The Iranians, the same. The Chinese may be having their new ideas. I don't want to open a new chapter for your interview, but it's becoming a more complex situation. And I think that this is why it needs very hard, strategically thinking minds, both in Washington and in Kabul.
Indeed. And just quickly before I turn back to Scott, the Russians also supporting elements of the Taliban as well as Iran?
I'm not sure if support is the right word, but at least in contact and in touch. To what extent this is going to translate into support is still an open question.
Turning to you, Scott Worden, and picking up from what Ambassador said, the Taliban seems to be split, the Afghan Taliban. We just witnessed this peace conference underway in Kabul last week, in which President Ashraf Ghani said, although he warned the Taliban, his government wants talks, but that the olive branch would not be offered indefinitely. So there is this, there's this open door. How do you see prospects for that?
Well, I think a key word for Afghanistan today and the region is fragmentation. And so finding some way and some process to consolidate opinions among the Afghan groups that are with the government and that are peaceful is really important. I think that while the door is open, the Taliban right now have been gaining territory in the countryside, and they have these spectacular attacks that have really affected people's opinions. So I don't think that the time is necessarily right to expect some kind of deal-making to occur. However, if you look at peace agreements and peace processes in different countries and in Afghanistan's past, they take a long time. And so I think starting with a dialogue in various formats, as Ambassador Samad said, reaching out to factions in the Taliban that might be interested in talking, sorting out what the opinions are of the different factions and of the region, that's really important. And over the past year, there has not been an agreed-upon forum, whether regionally or within Afghanistan, to have those discussions. And I think the time is right to start initiating a process, not just saying we have an open door, but here is who's in charge of negotiations, either for the Afghan government or for the international community, and moving the different factions toward a common position, or at least identifying the differences they need to resolve.
All right. Well, we'll have much more in the coming days and weeks about Afghanistan, and we hope that we can secure stability for that important country. I'm afraid that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guest, Ambassador Omar Samad. He's founder and president of Silk Road Consulting, formerly Afghan ambassador to France and Canada, and Scott Worden, director of Afghanistan and Central Asia programs at the U.S. Institute of Peace. Gentlemen, thanks so much for your terrific insights.
Thank you.
Encounter was produced in Washington. Thanks to Anna Zalewski for booking our guests. Our engineer was John Dryden, and I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on The Voice of America.